Thank you very much for inviting me to this conference to talk. And this is really very exciting conference. I truly mean this because I'm here just one day and I learn a lot of new things which will take me months to digest this. Being exposed to this field is very creative and very energetic field. I like it very much. I will talk about generation of intense ultrasecond X-ray pulses using free electron lasers. And I understand that the word intense is very subjective. And I just will preview in one word what you will probably hear from me at the end of the talk. I will be talking about producing X-ray pulses with energy in a pulse on a microjoule level. And maybe a few hundred ultrasecond pulse duration. This is about level 10 to 22 watts per square centimeter. That's what Gerald was talking in the morning of this. And certainly there is an old joke saying that free doesn't mean this lasers are free. The meaning of free here is that they'll deal with unbound electrons, which is a great relief for all of us who are not solid-state physicists by training, because simple system is much simpler and we can understand that. But at the same time, it brings a lot of problem because nature made in this way that one electron doesn't really wants to radiate a lot of photons. So we need quite a few photons in order to produce some meaningful light out of system. And then if you try to get this electron beam now consisting of many electrons, then the problem is how to get it shot. Because you take electron from a gun, and it's inconceivable that you can get very short electron bunch in a gun because space charge problem here. And then, but if you have a long beam, the traditional thinking is that the pulse duration will be as long as electron bunch, which is certainly not true because one can consider getting over this problem and going into what we call slice technique, because actually other people call this slice technique, saying if you cannot get a short bunch, let's try to use a fraction of electrons to do a useful job. But as it's shown, it would never work. I don't have any possible idea how one can take a very short part of electron bunch and separate it like shown here. But what is possible, perhaps, is use a laser, and laser scars in all capacities of length, starting of 100 femtosecond length, which we used already for some possible experiments which people do at existing storage, and comes down to a few femtosecond pulses, which we probably going to use to produce X-ray ultrasecond pulses. So basically, the idea is not to separate electrons, as I did show on one previous slide, but to use a laser pulse, short laser pulse, to put a mark on electron bunch, such that some electrons are different from the other because they somehow interact with this laser light. And that's why the name come here, it's like a slicing. And actually, I will go to show a couple of slides where this idea is used now to produce short, for this meaning, X-ray pulses, about 100 femtosecond pulses at various storage ring light sources. Just to get a head start for the rest of my talk, when I will talking about outer second pulses, I will review this because there are many things in common to here. So basically, in storage rings, electron bunch goes in circles, of course. And when it enters the Wigner magnet, laser pulse co-propagates with electron bunch here and interacts with electrons. And this interaction produces energy modulation, and then electrons modulated by energy go through the dispersive system, they separate it aside, and they radiate. And that's radiate quite far away from mainstream, such that they can be separated later on in a short femtosecond type pulse. So what key element is here is interaction of the light with electron beam. So basically, electron beam goes some wiggling trajectory following magnetic field, which has oscillating pattern here in a wiggler. And this is very important, because the only way you can get interaction and some energy change in electron beam if it's really legal, because laser light goes this way and it has electric field perpendicular to direction of propagation, and you need to go to find a way to change the energy E dot V. That's why you need a slight component of horizontal velocity, and it's not enough just to do that. You need to set up so-called resonance condition such that electron moves slowly than the light, obviously. But you can control how slow they move, and you would like to make such a that they accomplish complete circle during one period and will be delayed on one optical wavelength. Such, and this way you keep synchronism, that electron come in certain phase here, and it keeps staying in this phase period after period. So it keeps gaining energy. So, and this is very important. And I will refer this later in some techniques that I will describe, that we need the synchronism to exchange the energy. And if electron has not really satisfied with energy, this is gamma factor here, to this synchronism, it will not get this energy modulation from a laser. So coming closer to subject of this talk about generation of autosecond pulses, I will follow this scheme, which is looks complicated here, but I will explain this in details in the next few slides. But all these schemes which we are going to discuss has one big assumption, because all they will rely that you have a source of coherent X-ray pulses at the beginning. So basically, they need free electron lasers to be built in order to work. So it could be considered as add-on to free electron lasers machine, which we know that they are going to be built. But let me start in explaining why we need that. Why we need free electron laser in the first place. So basically, one possibility, there are basically two major ways to produce X-ray using free electron laser. One possibility is to start with electron beam interacting with light, and this light produce energy modulation in electron beam, which is shown here just for one optical cycle. Then energy modulated electron goes through little chicane such that there is a time delay depending of energy, and it bunched electrons here. And bunching is really key word here, because now electrons stay together and they produce in downstream radiator more intense light than just unbunched electron beam. And actually, this is really important because one can consider using this light later on to start it over again, to use this light and to produce modulation of electron beam, but at much shorter period already. And this simulation shows exactly what is going on here. So basically, you take the beam, and it shows energy here and optical cycle here in this direction. You modulate by energy. So basically, you bunch this electron beam. And bunched beam, you send it in another downstream radiator. And bunched beam produces many harmonics. And this radiator now in synchronous to this harmonic, and it start creating some light at this higher harmonic, and it's because this light going on, it's also some modulation happen here on electron beam as well. Now you have a light at much shorter wavelengths, and you can take a fresh part of the electron bunch and start it over, but at much shorter wavelengths. Basically, you produce another modulation here, as shown here. You bunch the beam, and then you go to downstream radiator, and it produces more light on shorter wavelengths here. And basically, you can come down here to producing light, let's say, for what I will show, I need 2 nanometer wavelengths for this example. But the key point is that it's like laser light-like, because what you did, you start from optical light, and you up-converted frequency. But it's like a laser-like wave, and it has all property of the laser light. So next important component here is a few cycle laser here that we want to use to produce energy modulation on electron beam, like it's shown here. So basically, we take this few cycle laser and Wigner magnet with just few periods, fuming two here, just and then by nature of the interaction, electrons which in the right position gain some more energy, electrons in the wrong position did not see light at all, did not get energy, and some electrons get some energy but less than the peak, and we would like to distinguish amplitude of modulation as much as possible between two these peaks. That's why we would like to have some reasonable energy in this short pulse. Reasonable, it's a millijoule for us. So, and I heard already that it may be not a limit. Possibly one can go more than 1 millijoule. Well, so basically, I skip this because we rely on carrying wave stabilization for this purpose, because we really need to synchronize interaction such that some electrons gain most of the energy. And that's why we need to synchronize timing when a laser comes in such that it will gain certain energy shown here. And this is we would like to use. In the next step, what happens is electron bunch goes through downstream undulator here. And this undulator is set such that resonance conditions, which I mentioned before, is organized in a way that electrons with stop energy in resonance. Electrons with different energy, not in resonance at all. And that's why only electrons which near or at resonance interact with the light at 2 nanometers. And you see this light, that's why I said that I need a free electron laser walking, is provided by the same beam and propagate here and overlap electrons which comes energy modulated from this Wigler magnet here. So basically, what happens here, we get electron beam modulated by energy, and then it, when it comes through little chicane and becomes bunched, and here show just few cycles of 2 nanometer light with increased density, and this is bunched electrons will radiate more enhanced as unbunched electron, and this is what is used for free electron laser. Basically, I will skip this picture because don't need to show this. What happens here, this is picture I just did show here, that most electrons in resonance condition sit here, and there is some efficiency in this bunching which follows this energy variation here. So electrons which far away from a peak not bunch as good as electrons at the peak. So it's already a selection of electrons from majority of the last electrons. And you see the side peaks also here. They are away from resonance condition, but still not significantly away, and there is some bunching happens here. And as I said, that next step is really trivial, because what I need this bunched beam ready. And in a next step, there is a radiator, which is kind of, again, undulator magnet here, set at some harmonic, at this scheme, it's 1 nanometer wavelengths from the bunched electron. And then when electrons go, they produce coherent radiation, bunched electron. Electrons which not bunched produce just spontaneous emission. So basically, by just this very fact, we already get a selection of outer second pulse because it produced significant dominant radiation. All the rest electrons do not radiate as much, and that coming X-ray will be dominated by a bunch beam. And this is some calculations shown here of intensity of X-ray pulse. And you see here it's around 110 outer second in this particular, and it's shorter than 530 outer second, which here, we have here in a bunching profile. And the reason for that there is some destructive interference already because there is a phase change across the electron beam, as shown here, in X-ray light produced on the sides of the, and that's why the pulse is actually narrowing. And an additional step, if it's possible at all, I'm not sure about this, but there is this phase variation. It means that there is a frequency chirp, and using this frequency chirp, one can consider further compressing X-ray output. And Fourier transform limit will be around 80 autosecond here. So I talked about that selection is by dominance of radiation of bunched electrons over spontaneous emission. And that is a calculation here showing the spectra. First of all, they shifted a little bit because electrons which radiate out a second X-ray pulses had different energy, and that's why they reproduce a slightly different frequency. And spontaneous emission less intense and has a different energy. So it's possible to use a monochromator to select out a second pulse if one can wants to increase contrast, but it's already quite good and larger than one obviously here. So contrast defined here as energy in outer second X-ray pulse to rest of radiation. Next big question is synchronization. You don't accomplish anything if you just produce outer second pulse not related to anything. You need to do some physics with this outer second pulse, and you need some time mark on that. But fortunately, it's very natural for this technique to get a pump probe experiment going, because if you intend to use a laser pulse or some signal which related to this laser pulse as a pump and X-ray as a probe, you have at that point absolute synchronization, because the very existence of outer second X-ray pulse is due to the time mark set of the, by the laser interaction with electrons. So basically, one can take the same signal as shown here and bring it to some experiment, or split the light here and bring it kind of differently. It's up to the way of to set up experiment. But the idea is the following, that there is absolute synchronization. But not to the level probably that we want to see, because what happens here, after this moment, X-ray beam will be X-ray light will be created by electron beam, and it goes from this point to point which produce radiation some number of tens meter, maybe 20, 30 meters. Light goes its own way, same 30 meters. So there is could be time difference between uncontrolled time difference. So and there is a question: could you really make a more precise control of the light? Perhaps yes. Because this electron beam will carry out 800 nanometer modulation, which was imposed on it, and one can use downstream, after electron beam already produced X-ray light, some little buncher at 800 nanometers, put radiator here, and produce light, which will be synchronous to X-ray, but invisible. And then one can take standard technique for cross-correlation of this light with light produced by electron beam and say what is the time difference already close to the experiment. So this is one way we're thinking that some synchronization can be accomplished. And perhaps, something happened here. Perhaps there is another way which I tend to show here. However, we did not do kind of detailed study on that. First of all, I would say that if you just reverse 180 degree phase of the laser light, then instead of having this position as a one peak, you get a preferable position electron sitting in these two peaks, which very precise distance between these peaks. And all these electrons will produce outer second X-ray pulses. But the distance is fixed here. One can do, this is better here, differently a little bit. One can take some phase shift in a laser light such that use different configuration of energy modulation of electrons and use electrons sitting on this part and electrons sitting on that part to produce outer second X-ray pulses. And now, because there is an energy difference here, we can use some dispersive bending system such as to control the distance between this two positions, as shown, for example, here, when electron bunch arrives in modulator, which actually produce time mark for X-ray outer second pulses. So by doing some adjustments in time delay, we can get distance like that, like that, like that shown. But obviously within time range a few femtosecond here. And if one needs to do this in a longer scale, yeah, it's a different adjustment. Yeah. What do you mean? Yeah. It's earlier and this later. This? Actually, anything. Yeah, this overlapping. If one wants it, I just showed you it. Maybe one wants to get 50 outer second away for application. Is this what the question? Okay. Obviously, one can do differently if one wants to do a larger time scale. One can use two seed laser and provide two peaks clearly separated. But this will be only on a 5 femtosecond time scale, like shown here. And the problem here is that it will be single color. If one wants to use this for pump probe experiment, you would use pump same color as a probe. So maybe it could not be useful for all experience, but for some, might be useful. Now I'm switching to another free electron laser, which is using spontaneous emission and amplifying the spontaneous emission to produce X-ray pulses. This is basically the mainstream machine which is going to be built at SLAC and later at DAISY. The idea here is that you use the same trick. You provide energy modulation of electrons, as shown here. But now selection goes differently. All electrons get some rays to X-ray pulses, X-ray output. But because energy is different, X-ray output produced by electrons sitting here is different from majority electrons. And if you able to use monochromator, then you can select the light, which you know for sure it comes only from those electrons. And this already selection for rather short pulses. But for this technique to work, you really need quite a significant separation in energy, and it would request more energetic laser pulse, which is few millijoule level here. Better refining of this idea is shown here. It's basically starting from what I just showed and getting some process going such initial light already produced here. And then delaying electron beam such that this light will interact with fresh electrons in downstream modulator, get the following result. This modulator is already adjusted such that it preferred this energy. And that's why radiation by the electrons with this energy will reach saturation by the end of this undulator, and radiation of electrons by this with this energy would not reach saturation. So, and that's why selection of outer second pulse by the intensity will happen here rather automatic, and then you may not need monochromator then to work. Another technique, also suitable for SASI field, get a slightly different idea. And I will explain it in a second. For this technique to work, we actually would like to use two Wigler magnets and to combine interaction with two lasers on the same electron bunch, such as produce energy modulation, as shown here. But why we need two? Because we would like to gain more selectivity between main peak and adjusted peak. Actually, what we do, we create sharp energy variation in the central area and reduce energy variation in a side location with the same slope in order to realize the following idea. So the basically the beam energy modulation will be shown like here, and when this bunch will pass the little chicane magnet, it will bunch here. And I will show in the next slide, I will show actually here. So basically, bunching here will be giving quite a huge peak current comparing to bunching on the side locations with another location with another reasonable energy modulation of electrons. And what you see here in the blue line is a case when I use two Wigler magnets. And if I just use one Wigler magnet, then selection of difference between central peak and side peak is maybe not that great. That's why I use two Wigler magnets. And this idea is basically to combine interaction of light on the same beam. It's basically, one can say differently, increasing the bandwidth of the light, which may not be possible to do, but I think the better idea, the better way to realize this idea would be what I heard just in previous talk, is to use a polarization switch, because interaction of electron beam with the light is polarization selective. And I just heard it could be as short as femtosecond, and it would be absolutely great probably to use for this technique. Then you select a very short fraction of electron beam, and you would not be talking about side peaks. But it needs to kind of further analyzing of this idea, if it really works or not, but perhaps it works as I anticipated now. But let me show what happened here. This plot shows how energy in a pulse grows when the beam goes downstream the undulator line. And this black line shows radiation accumulated from all electrons sitting in a 100 femtosecond electron pulse, electron bunch. So basically you see at the beginning is dominant and then it keeps growing, but not as fast as another line shown here, because peak current here is not as large as peak current carrying by electrons giving this radiation. And gain length depends from a peak current in some complicated way, but larger peak current give shorter gain length. And that's why electrons shown in blue for the central peaks reach saturation earlier than other electrons. They give some dominance in radiation produced at this point at least. And this is showing what a side peak do, and that's why I wanted to kind of push them down to improve the contrast here. And again, contrast is energy radiated by outer second pulse to everything else. And this is a result of simulations of run these kind of different seeds, and showing that, in fact, if you stopped here, took away extra take a beam away from going downstream Wigler undulator, then you will get X-rays which will dominant and in a pulse duration about a few hundred outer second here. And here I'm giving a little summary of various techniques which I just described, but what I would like to outline that perhaps it's possible to come to a regime when in outer second pulses, and for us outer second probably a few hundred outer second, pulse power would be at the level of gigawatts, and some proposals say maybe even 100 gigawatts level. So this is a microjoules level in a pulse, and that's what intensity could be reached at 10 to 24 per square centimeter, because this light can be focused in a very tiny area, because we're talking about X-rays. So in my summary, I would like to say that there is a real feasibility to produce outer second pulses, outer second X-ray pulses, and by our definition, it's intense. And key element here, that's what we are borrowing from optics field, is intense few cycle optical pulse with carrying well phase control. And actually, I think we would appreciate this pulse not only at 800 nanometers, but perhaps at various wavelengths, such that we could have some possibility to choose and readjust to real machine what wavelengths is maybe works better. Important parameter is that there is absolute synchronization between optical pump and X-ray probe pulses. And here I come back to what I said, that FEL facilities are very expensive. They're going to build, but will be really very expensive machines. What is good about what I discussed in this talk, that the very possibility to produce out-of-second X-ray pulses comes as add-on to these machines. So they would not really be as expensive as all the rest. As soon as this machine will be built, tested, commissioning, people learn how to operate this machine, it will be natural kind of step forward to continue and produce out-of-second X-ray pulses. You need just bring a little magnet system. You need to bring these lasers, and then you go on. You have everything already set to go with out-of-second generation. I would like to acknowledge contribution of Bill Fowle and Greg. Most of the idea will generate it together. And thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you very much for a nice talk. Some questions?
It seems like the sort of general name of the game here is to achieve enough energy modulation by passing the laser through the beam as it's going through a wiggler in order to be able to compress it to a small bunch. So that opens up some questions that might be particularly interesting for the group of scientists that are here that know how to make short pulses, not just at 800, but also in the VUV, these out-of-second pulses, because the out-of-second pulses themselves are kind of well-characterized. So the general question to kind of start that off would be, how does this energy modulation that you need in order to compress in the chicane, how does that modulation depend on the wavelength and the other parameters like the energy of the electron beam in the wiggler?
Let me write it down. Oops, I'm sorry. Disappeared. So amplitude of energy modulation. Let me write proportion. So it's basically pulse energy and photon energy.
Okay, so you don't really lose very fast as you go to higher photon energy. You need larger energy because it's
no. You go to higher photon energy, you gain.
Higher
photon energy you gain.
Oh, that's I see. Yeah.
So, and there is a very fundamental reason for that, because the light. I will explain it in two words, actually. When you look downstream Wigler magnet, say put some detector here, and what you detect, spontaneous emission from Wigler and laser light. You don't interested in just laser light, and you want to know what the energy of this pulse. You don't interested by laser light, you don't interested in just spontaneous. You're looking for interference. Interference is energy exchange. So you lose in the field, you gain by electron beam. And that is the energy. Square root of this is a field of laser. And this is a field of spontaneous emission. And that's why the product of energy and spontaneous emission, energy in spontaneous emission is alpha H omega by definition. Electron cannot radiate more than alpha photons. In a MOOC. And that's why this simple conclusion here. Talking about beginning your question, do we always need as much, kind of, as I said, energy in a laser to produce whatever energy modulation is. Not always, because in some techniques, what comes is a ratio, energy modulation and energy spread in the beam. This is responsible. If you have zero energy spread, you just move a little bit aside electron and you're already bunched. But if you have some energy spread and you move a little bit and your energy spread, you don't do because electrons move all possible ways because energy. So this is important. But this is also a great challenge for us to produce electron bunch with visible intensity and small energy spread because it's brightness of electron beam. Peak current times energy spread is brightness. And this is a challenge for the same reason as I said that one cannot get a short electron bunch with reasonable number because too bright will be. There is a space charge effect. But for some techniques, energy spread is not matter. Like if you select by frequency and monochromator, you still need the offset. So depending what you use. Technique which I prefer, because you have full control using harmonic cascade field, this will be this ratio.
I have a question, Sasha, about the timing. It's clear that the attosecond pulse is synchronized to your IR laser pulse, clearly. But the bunch, where that laser reaches the bunch, there is some variation in timing when it first encounters.
Yeah.
So it's a question about trade-offs. I can see you might want a broad bunch that's less susceptible to timing variations where they cross. But at the same time, if you stretch that electron bunch out, you're lowering your peak current for that drives the FEL process. Is there a trade-off there?
I think what I have in mind is a little bit different. This laser put a mark on electron bunch and say electron bunch this long, and mark this shot, it sit here. Is it important that always sit here, or can be sit here or there? I say it's not. Because what happens that those electrons eventually must be overlapped by the light produced downstream. And this light is 100 femtosecond long. So if you synchronize within 100 femtosecond, you're doing your job fine.
Okay, so because the time scales are so much
because we have some headroom, because the job done by this light which produced modulation at 2 nanometers which eventually causing some radiation effect.
Which means you can still have fairly high current bunches because the laser pulse is so short.
In this simulation we use kind of what people assume is possible to do.
Thank you.
In a realistic fashion. So.
Any other questions? Actually, I have just one question. What sets the focus ability of your output radiation?
This is a good question. It probably depends from intensity. When it comes to 10 to 22 watts per square centimeter, it will be difficult already because too intense. So I'm not sure that people want to use that. But assuming that you are kind of able to do this with X-ray optics, then coming down to 10 nanometers, angstrom X-ray wavelengths, it's not kind of surprising. One can do that.
Well, let's thank the speaker again. And we're up to.